Good morning. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Cheryl Gasser, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn on this Thanksgiving Day. I hope you'll be able to be with friends and family today to celebrate, and I hope that you'll take part in today's conversation. This hour, we'll be examining gratitude. What is it? What are the benefits of living a grateful life? And how can you practice it actively? My guest this hour has done scientific research on gratitude, what he refers to as the forgotten factor in happiness research. He says that expressing gratitude regularly and frequently can change your life in significant ways. Do you consider yourself a grateful person? Does it come naturally, or do you have to work at it? We'd like to hear from you this hour. Join in the conversation. We're broadcasting out of Madison today, so Kathleen can have the day off. The number to call today is 800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, 263-1890. My guest this hour is Robert Emmons, professor in the Department of Psychology at the University of California, Davis. He is a leading scholar in the positive psychology movement and the author of many books, including most recently, Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier. Professor Emmons, welcome and thank you for joining us on this Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Cheryl. It's great to be with you.
And let's start out with a definition. What is gratitude?
Well, gratitude, we think of it as simply being thankful for benefits received, and on one level, that's what it is, but it turns out it goes way beyond that. I like to think about it in terms of two components. Number one is awareness, so being attentive, being mindful of the benefits that we've received. Perhaps they're gifts that we've gotten from others. Perhaps it's just mindfulness of the fact that my life has more positives than negatives, so we have an awareness or attentiveness. And then second is a recognition that these gifts or benefits did require the contributions that other people have made. So it's really two things. Number one, it's being aware. And number two, it's recognizing that other people have helped us, supported us, sustained us in our lives.
So you can't be grateful for yourself in any way.
That's true. It's very different from other emotions. You know, you can get angry at things you did or didn't do. Certainly you feel guilty about something you did or didn't do. You can be happy, or pride is really about the self. But it's impossible to be grateful to yourself. You know, even if you gave yourself a present, you know, you wrapped it up on your birthday or put under the tree at Christmas and opened it up, you wouldn't be grateful, right? It really requires the perception other people have contributed to your life.
And gratitude is properly classified as an emotion. I've heard it referred to as a mood or an attitude. But in the psychology field, you see it as an emotion.
Well, it's really interesting because it's a lot of different things. It is an emotion. Certainly, we do feel gratitude when we receive a gift. We can be in a grateful or a thankful mood when there's no particular trigger, no particular gift or benefit we're focusing on. It's also an attitude, and that's really where it becomes interesting in my interest in it, is as a disposition or an attitude, something that a person carries around with them in their lives that really influences how they interpret themselves and the world and other people. And as an attitude, it becomes a orientation toward life, you know, much like optimism is, or pessimism, a way of looking at life, a way of framing experience that for many people report that this really changes their lives. It really becomes transformational.
And we'll get into ways to practice gratitude a little later in the hour. But there's also an aspect of gratitude that you say is important, and that is that we're receiving something that we don't have a claim to, in a sense, something we don't deserve. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The traditional meaning of the term gratitude comes from the word grace or gratuity. And so when we receive something gratuitous, means that it's free. It's freely given. It's not something we necessarily did anything to deserve it, or we have a claim to it. And so what happens is that people, the more likely they perceive that they're getting something that they don't deserve, quite independent of what they've done or what they've been able to do on their own, they're more likely to feel a sense of gratitude. So gratitude stems from this perception that I've gotten more than I necessarily deserve.
So is it really gratitude when I thank the waitress for my iced tea, or I thank my husband for getting the mail? These seem to be pretty superficial. I mean, I am genuinely mm-hmm. thankful, but it's more done out of polite habit, and it doesn't seem to really rise to the level of true gratitude.
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, I do think there's different levels or layers to gratitude, which range from the simple thanks that you'd say to the server or to a spouse. And then at the other extreme, we have this orientation toward life where you view life and everything in it as a gift, and there's different levels in between. But I do think even simple expressions of thanks can be more than simple expressions if they're done in a meaningful way, if they're done in a heartfelt, authentic way, by focusing not just on the fact that, you know, the server brought you iced tea, but that perhaps, you know, she was also juggling, you know, 12 other tables at the time and went out of her way to remember the fact that you had requested iced tea, you know, without sugar. And so you give thanks not just for the act itself, but for the person's intention. And that's when thanks can become gratefulness.
And talk a little bit more about the difference between gratitude and gratefulness. What is the distinction there?
Right. So I think, again, gratitude, we typically think of it as the feeling. That's the emotion in response to a gift, whereas gratefulness is more of a trait or a character disposition, a virtue, if you will. So for thousands of years, philosophers and theologians, devotional writers have talked about gratefulness as an element of one's character, of human nature, a part of, you know, who we are, that really is something that makes life better for ourselves and for other people around us.
It also seems to me that gratitude might be the short term and gratefulness the long term. Does that make any sense to you? I think that's a good distinction, right?
When an emotion we feel usually for a very short period of time, whereas, you know, something that's sustained over a longer period of time might be described as, you know, the trait, in which case it would be gratefulness.
What evidence is there, scientific evidence, that expressing gratitude can really improve our lives?
Yeah, so that's basically what we focused on in our research, is trying to understand, you know, why gratitude is important, why does it matter. And certainly one can argue it based upon philosophical reflection or, you know, devotional writings or political rhetoric, and those are all important sources of information, but I wanted to try a more scientific approach by empirically examining, could you actually measure gratitude, you know? Could you see what effect it has in people's lives? And that's what I've been trying to do in my research for the last 10 years, is get people to cultivate gratitude by a simple process of keeping a gratitude journal. Now, there's lots of different ways to increase your level of gratefulness. This is the most basic way that we thought of, and a way that people can easily implement in their lives, no matter who they are, what age they're at, what's going on in their lives. They write down things in their lives for which they're grateful or thankful.
Can you talk about what some of those entries were? I mean, and maybe get into a little bit about how you'd want to journal in the most effective way?
Well, I think you mentioned those at the top of the program, that, you know, there's almost no limit to the sorts of things that a person can write about in their gratitude journals. They do focus on things like nature. They do focus on the kindness of other people. They focus on overcoming an obstacle. They focus on life not being worse than it actually is. You know, there's a wide variety of different gratitudes, and it's just amazing the latitude of the themes and topics the person writes about. We had one woman, she wrote to me a couple of weeks ago, sent me an email from Utah. She's been keeping a gratitude journal for about 20 years. She has over 18,000 individual entries in her journal.
Wow.
And she says she tries very hard not to repeat the same one more than once, to keep it fresh, to keep it creative. But this leads to her to have very specific gratitudes, one of which she said, I'm grateful that I didn't grind up any spoons in the disposal today. So, you know, you can get very specific,
very creative,
if you've been doing it for 20 years.
And so let's go into a little more depth in this journaling. I mean, I wouldn't want to just write. I mean, I imagine if I were to start journaling today, I might write that I'm happy, you know, I'm grateful for my, you know, my husband and my son, my family, my friends. But you could write that day after day after day.
And people do, right? I mean, one of the young adults, female in our study, she wrote down for 3 weeks every day. She said she was grateful for her cat, her dog, and her apartment. And day two, cat, dog, apartment. Day three, same thing. Right? It was always in that order. The cat was always before the dog, which is interesting. But, so the way to do it, I think, to make it more effective and to make it really have an impact is to dissect each item, each role, each person, let's say, if you're focusing on, you know, spouses or children or parents, and then what exactly did they do? What did they provide you with? What sort of benefit? Did they give you a ride? You know, did they Did they take time to, show you something you knew that would be helpful for you? So we get more specific and we elaborate on the benefits. Then I think, the process itself becomes more meaningful.
And so you found you had these in your research, you had people journal. And how long does it take for the benefits to show up? And what did you find? I mean, was everyone who journaled, become a happier person?
No, I'm sure they didn't. What we did with our experiments, we did controlled trials where we used random assignments. So we assigned half the people to keep gratitude journals, and we wanted to compare these to another condition. And so the other condition was very dissimilar, and that was people were asked to keep journals of what was going wrong in their lives, so hassles, complaints, annoyances, irritations. So each group wrote down five of these, either gratitudes or hassles, every night for a period of 3 weeks, 21 days. We thought that would be long enough to start to see an effect. We didn't want it to go on too long, so that became burdensome and really was disruptive in their everyday lives. But when we analyzed the data, we found that within the first week, we start to see shifts, differences between the two groups in terms of their energy. So the gratitude journaling group report a higher levels of energy, of vitality, of enthusiasm, of alertness, attentiveness. So that was one finding.
Mm-hmm.
Another finding, which we didn't really expect or predict ahead of time, was in terms of physical benefits. These didn't show up right away, but when the study ended, we noticed that the people in the gratitude condition were actually feeling healthier. They actually exercised more. They slept better. They woke up. They felt more refreshed. And they were bothered less by everyday aches and pains. So it seemed like there were some physical health benefits as well as psychological or emotional benefits. And the last was in terms of relationships. People keeping the gratitude journals reported feeling closer, more connected to others, less lonely, less isolated. They actually were more likely to be helpful, help others with a personal problem if they were keeping a gratitude journal. And what was really fascinating was that they had no idea they were in an experiment. They just thought they were keeping a everyday record of their thoughts, emotions, stress and coping, that sort of thing. So they didn't know. It wasn't like, well, I'm in a gratitude experiment, so therefore I should do these things or feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, as we say, blind to the nature of the experiment. So a whole host of benefits seemed to result from gratitude journaling.
Now, did you tell them at the end of the experiment what it was all about so they would understand and perhaps continue this journaling?
Yes. They were fully, as we say, the term is debriefed, mm-hmm. explained to the purpose of the study. And 6 months later, I went back and asked a subset of them to tell me about your experience and how it affected you. And I also included some other questions about, well, are you still doing this? And about half the people, close to 50% of the people, when I contacted them down the road, said they had continued to keep the gratitude journal. They were telling other people about it. In other words, they saw the benefits. And in fact, the differences between the groups were sustained over the six-month period. So, 5.5 months, or nearly 5.5 months after the study ended, the people who were originally journaling were reporting higher levels of positive emotions, better physical health, better relationships compared to the other group.
And I guess it doesn't surprise me that 6 months down the road, half of them were still journaling. What might surprise me is that half of them weren't. What if you have all these benefits, if your life is so much better, mm-hmm. All you're doing
right.
is writing, writing down a few thoughts at the end of the day or the beginning of the day, why wouldn't everyone continue?
Well, that's interesting. And so I looked a little bit at their particular individual responses, and it was kind of interesting. I think some of them were still doing it in their head. They were doing it mentally without actually putting it down on paper. They would say things like, well, this has taught me to focus more on my blessings. And so now I think more about them in a conscious way. I used to take things for granted. I do so less now. So maybe after a while, what happens is that the practice becomes a habit. And as a habit, it starts to become more natural and more spontaneous. You don't have to be quite so intentional about writing it down. Some of the people said, I've always been doing this. Your experiment reminded me that it's a good thing to do, that there are benefits, but I've always been doing this because the idea of journaling has, been a tradition and a practice that's been around for a long time. So in some respects, there's nothing new here. And so they were just continuing or had stopped because it's been something, been a way of life that they had engaged in for a long time.
And does it make a difference when you're counting your blessings, whether you write them down, say them out loud, think them in your head? Is there any difference?
Well, you know, I do think there's a benefit to taking the thoughts and putting them down, making them concrete. So whether you you talk about them to other people, and I've studied people and talked to people who do this sort of thing. You know, they exchange them with partners. They have what they call gratitude accountability partners. So they may talk on the phone to a friend. They may have a small group they meet with and do it that way. They might somehow the act of getting it down, whether it's in words or on paper, takes the thoughts and makes them more concrete. I think it helps us organize our thoughts and organize our minds so that we get really, I think, a sense of control and a sense of ownership, empowerment through this process of translating the thoughts into language.
We are talking this hour about gratitude and gratefulness with Robert Emmons, author of Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier. You can join in the discussion this hour. We're broadcasting out of Madison. The number is slightly different. Call 800-642-1234, or if you're in the Madison area, 263-1890. I'm Cheryl Gasser, in today for Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up this afternoon at 4 o'clock, Ben Marins has the afternoon off to be with his family. But join us from 4 until 6 for the Third Coast International Audio Festival, showcasing some of the world's best radio documentaries. That's coming up from 4 to 6 here on the Ideas Network. Good afternoon, good morning, rather. I am Cheryl Gasser, sitting in for Kathleen Dunn this morning on the Ideas Network. And this hour, it goes by many names: thankfulness, gratefulness, appreciation, grace. It's considered an emotion, an attitude, a virtue, and a way of life. It's gratitude. And we're talking about it this hour with our guest, Robert Emmons, author of Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier. We'd like to hear from you this hour. You can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Let us know what you are grateful for on this Thanksgiving Day. You can also send your comments to talk@wpr.org. And Professor Emmons, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Lots of callers wanting to get in on the conversation this hour. Our first caller is Larry here in Madison.
Hi. If you're connected to a religious tradition, it can set a framework within the course of the year and in the course of the cycle of life for expression of gratitude. In Judaism, we have a prayer called the Shehecheyanu, which thanks God for giving us life, sustaining us, and helping to bring us to this season. And we recite that at six different holidays throughout the year. And we also recite it at bar and bat mitzvah ceremonies, at weddings, and at baby namings. And it also reminds us, if we look at our sense of gratitude within our community, as well as within ourselves individually, that it can then compel us to reach out to share what we have with those who are less fortunate.
Larry, thank you for your call. Professor Emmons, are people of faith more grateful than others? Is it easier to be grateful if you have faith in your life?
You know, there's such a tradition, a foundation of gratitude in all the religions, all the major, you know, great religious traditions place an emphasis on gratefulness or thanksgiving, as Larry was saying. In the Hebrew Bible, for instance, if you look at the Hebrew Bible and the New Testament, just for those two religions, there's over 150 verses that use the word thanks, thanksgiving, thankfulness, the importance of giving thanks. And, of course, religions have, you know, prayers and frameworks, theology, scripture, practices to sustain a sense of gratefulness. So there is a link between religiousness and religious lifestyles and gratefulness. It's not quite as strong as you might think, so that there are a lot of people who are not part of an organized religion, you know, still have obviously the ability to feel a sense of gratefulness, but the perspective is somewhat different. So the people who are going to sit down today for dinner and give thanks will most likely give thanks for, you know, for each other, for the people who provided the food, for the various blessings they have in their lives. They wouldn't include the Creator in this list of gratitudes, but it certainly wouldn't diminish from their experience of gratefulness.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, Larry. And Professor Emmons, let me ask you, I could imagine that there are downsides to gratitude. I could imagine feeling pressure to give back for all that I receive.
Yeah.
I acknowledge the goodness. I recognize the source is something outside of me. And then I want to give back. And so if every step of the way, every day, I'm feeling grateful for all of these things, wouldn't there be a pressure? Couldn't gratitude become a burden?
Yeah, you know, that's what makes it such a fascinating topic, is that it's not simply an element of positive thinking that just makes you feel good. It's not just a warm, fuzzy sentiment. There is this complicating element that's, like you say, there's a sense of obligation or indebtedness. And what do we do if we can't reciprocate, you know, if we cannot give back in a manner in which we've received? We feel conflicting feelings. You know, many times we've been given benefits by a person, whether it's a spouse or parent, for example, but we've also been harmed by that person, right? We've been hurt in the past. Maybe we have some issues. We have some resentment. How do we balance those conflicting feelings? Some people feel guilty because they've been given so much, and they compare themselves with people who are, you know, more unfortunate than they are, and say, "Why have I been given so much? I don't deserve all this," and that leads to guilt over gratefulness. Yeah, that's just some of them. Then there's the whole issue of the giver of the gifts. You know, gift exchange has a lot of baggage associated with it, right? Gifts can be used to control the beneficiary, the receiver, to guarantee his or her loyalty, right? There could be status differences between the giver and the receiver. And so I think you're right. There are some complicating factors when it comes to the role of gratefulness in human nature.
Well, what about the idea that being grateful for so many everyday things what make you settle for what you have? And it's good to be happy with what you have, but not make you strive for more, not make you push to get a better job or, you know, just settle for the status quo.
Yeah, well, certainly no excuse for inactivity or passivity, right? That is an assumption that some people have. So does encouraging people to be grateful produce, you know, passivity or acceptance or complacency or satisfaction? And I mean, we find that, as I mentioned before, one of the benefits of gratefulness is that it makes you more inspired, it makes you more energetic, or as the caller Larry mentioned, it motivates you to go out and to give back in a manner which you've received. You want to, you know, express that gratitude by some sort of reciprocal giving. So when we look at our lives in an honest way, when we examine our lives, we look at what other people have done for us, and that sometimes we see an imbalance here. If we do a sort of ledger between our debits and our credits, we see that we're given much more than we receive. That doesn't sit well with us. You know, we don't stop behaving. We don't become passive because of that. We want to actually give back. And so we find the grateful people engage in purposeful activities in order to, you know, I think it's to reciprocate the goodness they've received.
Okay, let's go back to the phones and take our next call from Blancherville. Jana is calling in.
Hello.
Good morning, Jana. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to bring up a book, and there's also a workbook that goes with it. It's called Creative Visualization, and I don't remember the author's name offhand because I read those books when I was in my early 20s. But I ended up forming basically a gratefulness or appreciation workbook out of it, which I had taken to a therapist. And I guess that's one of the things that I wanted to say was how grateful I am for books. And I think a lot of people, you know, because there's an author behind it, an author, when they publish something, they're willing to put their name on it and have it open to the public, what they're saying. And you can get a book like that for about $10. And there's also another book called Simple Abundance, which my sister gave me, and she told me that probably I already was using a lot of the information in it, and, you know, it might not even be useful to me because I'd been doing that for most of my life. But I just wanted to reiterate the importance of books and the people who spend the time writing the books. Not everybody does it with dollar signs in their mind for profit, that they actually want to share valuable information with other people and do it at a reasonable cost. Thank you.
Jana, thank you for your call. And Professor Emmons, certainly you could just start a journal on paper, but there are quite a few books out there in stores, gratefulness journals of sorts and guides to help you. Do you think it makes a difference?
Well, I'm grateful for that opening that the caller made because, you know, I have a book as well that came out recently. And the difference is that, you know, I try to root mine in science based upon what we've learned about, you know, what gratitude is and what it does, and some evidence-based prescriptions for becoming more grateful. And I think, you know, I agree completely that, you know, we have a mission. We have an obligation, I think, as a scientist to put our ideas out there. And the average person is not going to pick up a scientific journal article, but they will read a book or a magazine article or an article on the Internet, which takes the findings of science, translates it into language and information that a person can use. And, you know, that's what I've tried to do. That's what I appreciate other authors doing, is taking a topic that can be forgotten, can be, you know, left out of everyday life, can be neglected or ignored, like gratefulness, and really, you know, show people that it has a power, that it can be transformative. And people begin to realize this, they put it into practice, they use gratitude journals, they take these ideas, they talk about it, they share it with others, and, you know, pretty soon we have a whole avalanche of, you know, findings that can be used in a way in which people can improve their lives.
Jana, thank you for your call. We are talking this hour with Robert Emmons, professor at the University of California, Davis, author of his new book, Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier. Please call in and join in the conversation this hour. There's room for you and time for you at 800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, or send us an email at talk@wpr.org. And we've been talking a lot this hour, Professor Emmons, about journaling, but you have 10 steps in your book, 10 steps to help us practice gratitude. So why don't we touch on a few more of those?
Right. You know, we need these practices because we tend to be very forgetful people. We get busy. We get distracted with the business of life, with jobs, with family, with all sorts of demands on our time. And as I mentioned at the outset, gratitude requires attention, requires, you know, taking time out to stop, to be reflective, to maybe examine one's life and see what one has received and what one has given. And all the various techniques are really just variations on this idea of trying to find something to be grateful for, trying to create an awareness, trying to sustain that awareness, you know, helping a person to realize that, you know, if they put these tips into practice, they can live their best life. They can extract maximum enjoyment and fulfillment from life, as well as cope better with the difficulties and adversities that life throws at us all of the time. So all the techniques are designed to foster this self-examination, this reflectiveness. And one of my favorites, besides journaling, is making a vow to practice gratitude. You make a commitment. You know, we know that making a vow, saying I'm going to, you know, stop drinking, for instance, or I'm going to lose weight, when it's made in a sort of a public commitment, you share that with someone else. Maybe today, what better day than Thanksgiving to make a vow to practice gratitude? Not one day a year, or one week a year, but every day of the year. Say, okay, I'm going to start gratitude journaling tomorrow. You know, making a vow, a commitment to do it, is a way of strengthening that commitment, that motivation, that resolve. And people who make these vows are more successful at changing a behavior than people who don't. So that's just one of the 10 tips. And keeping a gratitude journal is another one. One can learn prayers of gratitude in one's religious tradition or in various spiritualities. There's more generic prayers that are just a way of, you know, again, stopping, focusing, reflecting, becoming more attentive and aware of things that we normally take for granted.
We are talking this hour about gratitude and would love to have you joining the conversation, 800-642-1234. Let's go back to the phones for you, Professor Emmons. And our next caller is Matt, phoning in from La Crosse. Matt, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Good morning.
My question was on the idea of giving gratitude, you know, to a person. Mm-hmm. Like, Is there any, you know, suggestions on approaching this? Because sometimes, you know, it can be tricky, especially depending on your relationship. Like, if it's someone who has, you know, recently done something mean to you or someone you don't particularly like, I mean, you may be very grateful that they do, that they have, you know, done something nice for you, but it can be kind of awkward to actually tell them. I mean, is the gratitude thing more about, you know, the idea that you reflect on it, or more the idea that you actually tell the people that you're grateful for that you're grateful for them?
Good question, Matt. Professor Emmons?
Yeah, you know, I think there's benefits to both the feeling as well as the expression. As an emotion, gratitude calls for an expression. There's something incomplete about it. If you feel grateful and we don't express it, there's an uncomfortableness about that. It's like, I want to say thanks, but like, you're right, there's obstacles, right? There's issues in the history of the relationship between people that sometimes makes it difficult to express gratitude directly. So we can express it indirectly, right? We can reciprocate. We can do something kind for the person. We can provide them with some benefit that they couldn't do for themselves, right? So in some cases, we can express it directly. And there's research on this. People write letters to people that they're grateful for. Someone important in their life, who is influential, perhaps helped them in various ways in the past, but they've never properly taken the time to thank. They sit down and they construct a letter to this person, and they send it to that person, right? Or they may, depending upon the relationship and the comfort level, they may actually go and share that letter in person with that individual. And I think the expression of gratefulness, thanksgiving, is why it is so important for relationships, why it strengthens and deepens personal relationships. So you can get the psychological benefits by just reflecting on gratitude, thinking about it, feels good, it's nice to think about benefits we receive. But if you really wanted to deepen and strengthen, cement relationships, then it's got to be expressed.
Thank you for your call, Matt. Professor Emmons, let me ask, can you really choose to be grateful? I mean, aren't some of us just more giving and happy people than others?
That's a great question. You know, we know people certainly are different. There's baseline differences in how people were born based upon, you know, genetic factors and contributions and heritability. And some people may find it easier, for example, to be happier, to be more outgoing, extrovert, to be more optimistic. You know, and that's a good question. Is that the same case with gratitude? I'm not so sure, partly because gratitude is not really a basic, I think, emotion in the way that happiness, joy, anger are, not so clearly hardwired into the brain. There doesn't seem to be a universal, you know, expression of gratitude. Like, you can tell when somebody's, you know, disgusted or angry or surprised. You see their face, and people can identify with tremendous accuracy what that person is feeling. Gratitude is a little more complex, relying more on the frontal lobes, you know, than more older emotion systems in the brain. So it may be difficult to determine this. All of which being said means that I think it's more of a choice. I think it's an attitude that has to be cultivated, that doesn't come easily or naturally to people. It's an attitude, right? It's not just this emotion. So it might be hard just to wake up one day and say, you know, I'm going to be a more grateful person. I mean, that's like saying I'm going to be a more happy person.
Mm-hmm.
How can you do that? You can't do that, right? Because you can't force the feeling. But our feelings come naturally from certain thoughts, certain perceptions. If I perceive other people are out to get me, I'm going to feel anger or paranoia. If I perceive the world is full of benevolence and gifts, I'm going to feel gratitude. So it's the perception that we have control over, not the feeling.
So family upbringing could have a lot to do with it. If as a parent you teach your children to be grateful people, grateful children, it might be easier for them or become a practice in their day-to-day lives.
Modeling, certainly. Establishing family traditions, you know, rituals. Kids are very concrete. So, you know, of course, we can't give our kids things we don't have ourselves. So people will often ask, you know, well, how can I get my kids to be grateful? I say, well, you have to work on gratitude in yourself because, you know, children are watching. They're observing. They're soaking things in. And so it's one of the truths of, you know, virtues. Education is that virtues are not so much taught, but they're caught from role models.
We are talking this hour with Robert Emmons, professor at the University of California, Davis in the psychology department. He is the author of Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier. He is also a leading scholar in the positive psychology movement. You can join in the discussion this hour on gratefulness and gratitude. What are you thankful for? Do you currently practice gratitude in your daily life? And how do you show thanks to those around you? 1-800-642-1234 is the number. In Madison, you can call 263-1890. Sitting in today for Kathleen Dunn, I'm Cheryl Gasser here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up next hour, a Thanksgiving tradition continues when Larry Mueller talks all about birds with Noel Cutright and Bill Volkert. That's coming up at 11 here on the Ideas Network. I'm Cheryl Gasser in today for Kathleen Dunn. Happy Thanksgiving. This hour, we're looking at the benefits of living a grateful life. Are you someone who sees the silver lining in even the darkest of clouds? If so, we want to know your secret. 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. We are talking with Professor Robert Emmons. He is the author of the new book, Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier. Professor Emmons, let's talk a little bit about ingratitude. We've all experienced the unpleasantness of an ungrateful person, and perhaps at times we've even been this person. What does ingratitude teach us?
That's a very interesting question. Ingratitude, what exactly is it, and why are people so harshly condemned, you know, when they are perceived as ungrateful? It really goes against our sensibilities. You know, I think it really violates norms about human relationships and human interactions. You know, I don't even know if this has to be taught, but it seems like a universal law of behavior, the notion of reciprocity, right? We do good to people who have done good to us, and we don't harm those who have done good to us. And that's what ingratitude is. It's harming those who have, you know, done good to us by ignoring their benefits, or by, you know, derogating the contributions they have made, or saying, oh, they didn't really mean to help us. They were just doing it to make themselves feel better or to look good. And so I think it really is I guess there's no other way to say it. It's a pathology. You know, it really indicates a flaw in human nature to derogate or to say negative things about someone who's been helpful. And that's an extreme case. I mean, I think that's mm-hmm. relatively rare. More likely, we're just forgetful. You know, we're not so much ungrateful as we are non-grateful. You know, we just take things for granted, or we forget, or we think the person, you know, should be doing that for us, and they don't require thankfulness. And I think that's probably more common. But yeah, ingratitude is certainly a severe form of, I think, a human failure, really a defect in character that is hopefully mm-hmm. relatively rare.
Right, but I think not the extreme ingratitude, but the sort of everyday forgetfulness. I mean, it seems like we might be a culture of ingrates. We want what we want it now. Once we have it, we want more, and we feel entitled. I mean, kids, but also adults, it seems like we're a culture of ingrates to some extent.
A sense of entitlement, a sense of deservingness, right, that we earn this, we deserve it, we're entitled to it. I know, you know, go back to what we were saying earlier about what gratitude is. It's this perception that we have more than we think we deserve. We have extra, right? We receive free gifts. Well, pretty much if you believe that you're entitled to everything, it's going to be hard to be grateful for anything, right? Because mm-hmm. culture tells us to want more and more. So while I think gratitude is this, you know, is an instinct in a way, it's a basic instinct. We have a need to give thanks, to figure out why good things happen to us, to figure out the sources of our gifts and talents and abilities and benefits and blessings and so forth. This basic instinct gets, you know, trampled upon by, you know, a contemporary culture which tells us to strive more, to be constantly dissatisfied, that we deserve, that we are totally, you know, self-reliant. That's a whole other issue about autonomy and self-reliance and individualism, right? That goes against gratitude, because gratitude requires a sense of dependence. I couldn't do it all myself. I require the help and assistance of others. But if I am, you know, complete and independent and self-reliant and individual, I don't need you. I don't need help. And then I can't be grateful.
Well, we have a full phone bank, for which I am grateful. And our next caller is Larry in Pembine.
Oh, hi. First of all, I'd like to thank you for picking the topic today. And I'd like to thank the girl that actually put my call on hold.
That's Keisha Mabra. Thanks, Keisha.
Oh, yes. You're welcome. Anyway, I had just a casual observation, I guess, in life. And that is, I guess we're inherently an aggressive society. And one important, I guess, factor in that whole gratitude deal is the ability of being able to give of oneself on an everyday basis. Could be just a simple smile to someone in passing. It could be engaging someone that you wouldn't normally think of engaging in a conversation, and thanking that person for the conversation. And just little things, I guess, picking up somebody's dropped article of clothing in a supermarket or opening a door. And I'll just take my comment off the air and listen to what you have to say. Thank you so much.
Thanks for your call, Larry. Professor Emmons?
You know, there was a great book written a number of years ago by a Presbyterian minister. It was entitled Say Please, Say Thank You. And the subtitle is The Respect We Owe One Another. And I think that's what Larry's comments are getting at, is just, you know, expressing thanks is an element of respect, right? It's an element of what makes society stable and civil. And, you know, one of my missions is getting the word out there about the power of gratitude, which is why I'm so grateful for programs like this that really cause people to remember, to stop and reflect that, you know, we do owe gratitude to each other. You know, it's an element, it's an obligation of human relationships that does make life better for ourselves and people around us.
And we'll go next to Ellie in Madison. Thanks for holding, Ellie.
Thank you. Am I on?
Yes, you are. You're on the air.
Happy Thanksgiving.
To you, too.
And I love the topic. I wanted to just add that one of the places where I have been just taught to express gratitude is in 12-step meetings. And I think that comes with what the professor was saying about intentionality, that if you sort of have a spirit of gratefulness in your heart that is expressed, it fills other holes. And I've learned to do that, and I've learned to do it with the help around the tables of 12-step meetings. So I think if people want to learn gratitude and they also have some addictive problems, go to 12-step meetings and be grateful they're there. And I'll take my comment off the air. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, the self-examination that is required in the 12-step program, I think, is fertile ground to cultivate gratitude, probably because it cultivates a sense of humility. You know, we start to realize the fact that we do depend upon other people for who we are and what we have in life. We also, through this examination of the self, we realize the trouble, the difficulty, the harm that we've caused other people. And I think this comparison goes back to this notion of, you know, looking at our credits and our debits, what we owe people versus what we are owed. We start to realize that we've received much more than we've been given. And so, you know, a 12-step program or a spiritual examination that occurs in certain religious traditions, or, you know, the process of journaling itself, if it's, you know, an intentional and rigorous self-examination, I think, all get us to the same point. And that is an accurate view of where we stand in the world.
Thanks so much for your call, Ellie. Next, we'll go to Joan, also calling in from Madison. Joan, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a question that goes back a little bit. I'm interested in the research, and particularly in the group that were instructed to journal with negative experiences. What happened when they found out that they, you know, were part of research, and did you follow up with them later to find out if they had switched to gratitude journaling or if their life had changed at all? And I'll take my response off the air.
Thanks, Joan. Great question. Professor Emmons?
You know, of course, when we did the six-month follow-up, we did do the comparisons between the two groups. Now, it can be a little bit misleading. I don't want to suggest that, you know, keeping the hassles journal is going to make the people miserable, right? Or they're going to become so depressed they couldn't function in their daily lives. And because after all, this is just one aspect. This is just taking a few minutes a day, and that was part of the reason why the overall findings were still so astonishing in my mind. Was that, you know, there's tons of factors that influence our health and our well-being and our relationship satisfaction. All those outcomes we're looking at, and this was just one of them. And certainly, the gratitude group showed, you know, a marked improvement relative to the hassles group, the people who were asking to whine and complain every day. We didn't ask them 6 months later if they were still whining and complaining. I think it was a short-term effect because there was no motivation to keep doing it, unlike the gratitude group, because they didn't see any sort of improvement. But having said this, the hassles group, on an absolute scale, you know, they were still above average in terms of overall happiness, contentment, relationship satisfaction, you know, all the factors we're looking at, because most people in general tend to be above average. They tend to be There's this positivity bias, which I guess is a good thing. It keeps us, you know, functioning and successful in life, and people like to be around with us. Just that the gratitude moves you a little bit higher, you know, on this scale.
Thank you very much for your call, Joan. Jack in Kenosha is with us now.
Oh, thank you so much for the program, and thank you for taking my call. I don't know if you've talked about this before, but I wanted to recommend a wonderful book, which I think goes along with your program. It's called Making Heartbread by Matthew Dennis and Sheila Lynn, L-I-N-N. It's for parents with children. And it comes from a story after the Second World War. There were some refugee children in the camp. They were being taken care of and well-fed, but they wouldn't sleep at night because they were afraid that when they woke up, there'd be no more food like they'd been experiencing. Someone had the wonderful idea of just giving them a little biscuit or piece of bread to take with them, and then they slept peacefully knowing that they had food in the morning. The purpose of this, partially, and they just teach parents to ask children what was the best part of your day and what was the worst. But making heartbread is building those memories of when we were loved, when there was goodness in our life, so that when we don't have those moments or we have hard times, we have that heartbread to remember and feed us. And I think it's a wonderful thing to do with kids.
Okay, Jack, thank you very much for your call. And certainly I would think, Professor Emmons, with the Gratitude Journal, it would be wonderful as well to go back and read what you've written and remember all the things that you're grateful for over time.
You know, when I was considering different titles for my book, one of the ones that I was throwing around was that gratitude is a form of remembered goodness. You know, and that's really what it is. And what the caller was talking about is it's remembering the ways in which we've been supported and sustained by other people. And it's one of the reasons I think why gratitude is very effective for dealing with negative emotions like stress, anxiety, depression. Right? What is it about depressed people? How do they view the world? Well, they tend to view the world as full of randomness and lack of kindness, and they, you know, this leads them to perceive helpless, a sense of helplessness, a sense of hopelessness about the future. And you know, gratitude can help in reframing some of these ideas. And we do try to teach it in children as well, obviously, as parents. But we're also doing some research right now on children, on middle schoolers, fifth, sixth, seventh graders, and finding that it makes a difference in their lives, not only in terms of their mental well-being, but in terms of the whole school environment, in terms of academic performance. They're more engaged with their classes. They're more open to learning. They actually get better grades when they're keeping a gratitude journal. So across the lifespan, it brings benefits.
1-800-642-1234. That's the number to call. Five more minutes left in the hour. Time for your call. If you haven't had a chance, phones have been busy, but now we have a couple lines open. And I want to ask you, Professor Emmons, it seems like it can be a pretty difficult time in today's day and age. We're a nation at war. There's terrorism around the globe, natural disasters. Watching the nightly news can be a truly depressing event, and these things are happening all around us. Is it more difficult to be grateful in a world like we live in, or in a way is it easier because you sort of see the good along with the bad, or in comparison?
Well, you know, I think it's hard, but not necessarily for those reasons. I think it's harder because, you know, because of the abundance that we have. If we compare ourselves, you know, to 99% of the world's population here in America, certainly a place like Davis, California, or Madison, Wisconsin, right? I mean, we're wealthier by far than any other time in human history, right? Our life is easier, more convenient than ever before. We have more options and choices and possibilities than ever before. Right, but yet people are not more happy than ever before. Right? Surveys have found that people's level of happiness in general has stayed the same roughly over the last half a century, you know, even though objectively, you know, we have all of these advantages. And the question is why? Perhaps it's just easier to take things for granted now. Perhaps we're so shielded from suffering. Sure, we watch these images on TV or the internet, but we don't really feel those personally because they don't seem to impact us personally. And so, you know, I think that there's very powerful forces that, you know, make it very difficult to be grateful because we need this comparison, we need this contrast. And I find it fascinating. I have a chapter in my book about suffering and adversity, and some of the, you know, the most inspiring cases of gratefulness occur in people who have been through terrible times, have been through tragedies and crises and suffering, but they come through with a stronger sense of gratefulness for life. And so, you know, I think sometimes material abundance and an easy life makes it difficult to be grateful.
Let me ask you, Professor Emmons, do you practice what you preach? Do you journal on a regular basis? And what are you thankful for on this Thanksgiving Day?
You know, I found right from the start, when I began this church 10 years ago, that I was so excited about it, about gratefulness and the power and the influence that it had. I never really had to actually stop and do it. I was just thinking about it on a constant basis, which I guess in a sense was a downside because it was, I was using up energy. I could have been doing other things. And I was having trouble sleeping at night because I was so excited about what I was learning about gratitude and how it was affecting people's lives. And so I never really took the time to stop and write things. I guess I should have taken my own advice. It's one of those cases where, you know, the medicine is good, but the doctor doesn't always practice it. But, you know, as I stop and reflect, I'm just so overwhelmed by the power, by the potential that gratitude has, by the interest level. You know, when I listen to callers of your program and people contact me when I give talks and people come up, and I don't care about myself. You know, I'm not doing it to become famous as a graduate researcher. Is the concept that I want to promote.
Well,
people talk about the power of it. It's just unbelievable.
Well, Professor Emmons, we're out of time. We'll have to leave it there. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Happy Thanksgiving.
To you as well. Professor Emmons has been our guest this hour, the author most recently of Thanks, How the New Science of Gratitude Can Make You Happier. I'm Cheryl Gasser in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network.